Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson. This is the Itulia Basque Country Stage 4 recap. We're two-thirds the way through this wonderful World Tour level stage race. I love it. I love the scenery. I love the climbs. Love everything about it. Here with Benji back again. I've cooled down after my rant yesterday. Benji told me I have to calm down. It's not good for me. I disagree, but I've got to do what he says. This show is brought to you, like all our shows, by our year-long show partner, Lacolle. They make the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast possible. They've supported it pretty much since its inception, to be honest, and they've been listening since day one. So they're fans as well. If you want to check them out, they produce performance cycling apparel. Their link is in the description. Today's stage, the profile, I'll go through first. 190k, it's a little bit of a long one from Vittoria Gasteiz to Hondarribia. No mountaintop finish. We don't really have long 30-minute climb mountaintop finishes in the Basque Country, but still interesting racing. Rolling climbs, a lot of climbing. Two main climbs are the Jaizkibel, 8k's at 5.5%, which is, nothing too nasty in the Jaizkibel, to be honest. Large group would still be there afterwards. The main one, crests with 23k's to go, a false crest, as I said yesterday, then up and down downhill with plenty of places to attack. The main climb is the earlier Elites climb, 4k's at 10.5%, with pretty much steep the whole way. Some 500 meter sections are 13%, starters 11%. It's nasty. And then they have, as I said, 23k's to the finish and maybe an 8k flat run into the line. So there would be attacks. We knew that the GC standings before the stage started, Roglic leading GC, Pogacar second, 20 seconds behind, his teammate on UAE Emirates, McNulty the young American, on 30 seconds in third, Yates on 39, Valverde on 50. So UAE got the 1-2, Vingegaard for Jumbo-Visma was at 54 in sixth. That's the GC standings. Benji, this sort of stage, do we see stages like this designed in the Tour de France, or we see it in the Giro and the Vuelta, but do you think there's an opportunity to have stages like this in the Tour de France, or do we already have them in Stage 9 last year?
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example. Polarin, Stage 9 last year, was the one. I think they should be a bit more in these types of Grand Tours because they make for some interesting tactical decisions from teams, and we'll see that throughout the day today as well. And we're going to dive right into them in a second here. But I really like these types of parkours because it also reminds me of a Giro. I can't remember which one. Either the one that Dumoulin won or the year after, where Dumoulin was in the second group after a climb and he had to pace back on the flat section afterwards and something like that. And that makes for interesting race dynamics and decisions by teams that have multiple riders in those groups. So I was hoping a lot. But also the fact that the Jaizkibel climb, I think that's the one from San Sebastian, right? I kind of remember it vaguely.
I believe so. The name is very familiar to me, but I have memory problems. The stage played out with not a particularly strong break. It eventually kept getting whittled down on the climbs. The two remnants of the break were Ben O'Connor, you'll remember from the Giro stage win for NTT last year on a one-year deal at Eje Desert Citroën. Now he's in the break with Trek rider Lopez, Juan Pedro Lopez, maybe small diminutive Trek rider, good descender. Dropped O'Connor on a few descents, particularly the one off the Jaizkibel. Dropped him, nearly caused O'Connor to crash like Sivakov did behind Alaphilippe last year. And they were getting reeled in by a lot of teams working again. Jumbo weren't working. They didn't really need to. No one had threatened the break. Makes perfect sense. Bike exchange are working for Chavez. Who else is working? UAE, actually. The main drive into the breakaway that brought it back very quickly on the base of that last climb, Lopez just got to the early slopes before he got caught, was UAE. They sidled up to the front with a pretty strong show. Hirschi on the front. They had McNulty in the blue jersey and then Pogacar in that red jersey a little bit behind him. They start the climb. Pogacar and McNulty, they played it perfectly, UAE Team Emirates, but we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, they were pacing with Hirschi or someone else, and then they pulled off Landa in the drops, attacking very, very early, like probably too early. Sorry, Bahrain Victorious have been doing a lot of work. They've been doing a lot of work on this stage. He attacks Chavez. Attacks trying to bridge across to him. Jumbo Visma and the other GC contenders, they're so far back on GC. Chavez is like at 2 minutes, not too fast. Letting them go, letting them hang. And it was actually Brandon McNulty. Did you think he had it in him, Benji, to attack on a climb like this, ride past Chavez, go on the front with Lander, pretty much be dropping Lander off the wheel on supposedly his terrain and putting Jumbo on under a lot of pressure?
At the start of the week, definitely not. I think that changed a little bit after stage three, where he got dropped and lost only 18 seconds on a similar finish to these climbs. And this is obviously not the last climb, so it does offer an opportunity for someone like that to attack while not everybody in the group behind is going to start chasing him. And when it comes to McNulty, I think that he's proving once more that he's getting better at climbing. And I didn't anticipate that from his previous performances before this Itzulia Basque Country started, because his climbing was good, but it was not on a level where he could compete with the big guns. It's still not on a level where he can compete with the big guns, but it's good enough so that he can anticipate moves by the big guns. And that's kind of what he did today, but not necessarily to anticipate, but more to put pressure onto the on the Jumbo people. And when it comes to Jumbo in that second group, I think we had Tolhoek hanging on quite a bit, but eventually he dropped and it left the two that you expected the entire week already in that group. And that was Vingegaard still, and also obviously Roglic as well. So that duo seems to be the strongest two riders in that team. Omen not too good this week so far, and I'm not sure if that's, yeah, if that's, it's probably an issue, that's for sure, but I didn't see that coming.
I did.
And eventually...
What, you thought he'd be pacing on these climbs?
I thought Omen was going to do more than he has done this week already, because I haven't seen him too much, to be honest. Some Omen, like, he's not a terrible rider.
I know. But this is steep terrain. This is his terrain. Roglic, Pogacar, and co. And now McNulty is there, playing the GC 1-2 card that we thought Jumbo Visma might have played with Vingegaard and Roglic. Reverse Uno card. UAE sending McNulty up the road, putting a lot of pressure on Jumbo Visma. And they responded to it. Vingegaard chased down McNulty. They catches him just before the crest of the climb. Incredibly strong pull from Vingegaard. Closed it down. Eliminated that problem for Roglic temporarily. And because you realize McNulty's so close on GC because of the TT, and he's looking so good on a climb like this, with no 30-minute-plus mountaintop finish, you can't be letting him go too far up the road. Well, they reached the crest, as I said, 20Ks-plus into the finish, up and down descent, lots of places to attack, and lots of riders interested in attacking. Bilbao, Buchmann, Izagirre, all far behind on GC, Knox, Van Sevenot in the group as well, although I think they were just coming back. Carthy was dropping. He made his way back. But it was another attack on the descent by McNulty, and Vingegaard let it go. Or actually, that's not true. I take that back. McNulty attacked on the descent. Other riders started to follow. Bilbao, Chavez, Izagirre, Buchmann, and Vingegaard lashed onto the back of them. Roglic doesn't join that group. Vingegaard sits on the back of that group on this descent. And I'm thinking, isn't Vingegaard in the wrong group? Isn't he supposed to be pulling on the Roglic group? Because there's no use just sitting there. The other riders are going to work with him. Were you surprised straight away that Vingegaard got into that group, Benji? Would you think other teams would have done that? Do you think that was part of a master plan or something?
I think that usually when someone like a McNulty attacks, it's usual that you latch onto the wheel. But I think he hoped that people behind him would also be on his wheel so that the group sticks together and that they have McNulty caught. In this situation, nobody latched onto Vingegaard's wheel, which means that he was on the wheel of McNulty without the entire group behind him. And Roglic was not close enough to the front of the group to close that down to Vingegaard immediately. Because like usually you have like once this happens that the leader of the team is directly onto the wheel to make sure he doesn't have to close a gap onto Vingegaard's wheel, but Roglic was just not in a position to do something like that. And well, they're in a situation where Roglic and Pogacar are in the second group, McNulty and Vingegaard are in the first group, and then the tactics are coming into play because you're thinking it through. Vingegaard is behind McNulty in GC. If this group stays away and has a significant gap, McNulty is taking over the leader's jersey. And if this group doesn't stay away, then it is probably a better situation for Vingegaard and Jumbo, because then Roglic can stay in the yellow jersey. Or do you think that they would have had in mind, we're going to let them go, we're going to have Vingegaard in the wheel, we're going to hope for the love of God that EF is going to start basing in this group, otherwise this strategy will completely fail, and we're going to hope that McNulty takes the leader jersey with like 5 seconds to 10 seconds to make sure that on Saturday, once the road gets really, really tough, that UAE has to pace all day, which I don't agree with, but some people posted that, and I was like, I don't see that as a strategy you can't trust on EF to do that.
I want to deep dive on their tactics in a second. I think it'll make more sense if I recap what happens for the rest of the stage. Carthy starts pacing in that group. He's been dropped because he's got Higuita in the group for the stage when they've missed out. They've got the stage win going up the road. Higuita's caught back on. They're both kind of tired. Carthy pacing. Roglic just sitting there, Pogacar happy as Larry, seeing McNulty getting time on GC. Toluk joins the group. He doesn't pace. Still Carthy pacing. He gets incredibly frustrated. He's been on the radio saying what's going on. The gap's gone out to 30 seconds at this point on this descent. The group in front is working extremely well. Izaguirre wants the stage win. Bilbao wants the stage win. Bookman, Chavez, half GC, half stage. They worked flawlessly together, that group. McNulty obviously going 100% for GC, and Vingegaard sitting on the back, not disrupting. So you've got 2, 3, 4, 5 riders working full together the entirety of the time, pretty much until the last kilometer or 1,500 meters. Carthy pulls off. Jumbo Visma don't pull, despite having multiple riders in the group, and the gap out to 30, 35 seconds on this descent. We've got 12, 14 Ks left. Valverde's attacking on the descent. He gets brought back. Knox or Van Zevenon attacks. Few attacks because no one's trying to control. Eventually, they get into the valley off the descent proper. The gap is out to 50, 52 seconds. I tried to time it through one of the roundabouts. And McNulty's in the virtual leader's jersey at this point by over 20 seconds. Still, Jumbo-Visma haven't put anyone on the front. They got Tolhoek there and maybe Ooman. Definitely Tolhoek. Roglic is sitting up, stretching, looking at other people to pace. Pogacar tried to attack him and on one of the descents just because he saw him out of position. And eventually, Ineos and Carapaz caught back up and started pacing that group. And they eventually ate in 8 or 10 seconds, but the break was going to win. Izaguirre, Bilbao, Vingegaard, Buchmann, Chavez, McNulty. McNulty's riding like 33-40% for the group because he's going for GC so much. Eventually, Buchmann attacks, not backing himself for the sprint. Totally get it. McNulty brings him back. Looks incredibly strong. And I noticed Vingegaard was kind of at the back and not moving up so easily of this group. And he's, on paper, definitely one of the punchiest out of these guys. They're kind of GC guys, apart from maybe Izaguirre. Eventually, Chavez counters. No one looks because McNulty doesn't want to close him down. He's just closed down Buchmann. Buchmann works again. And then I can't remember. I think McNulty then just did start sprinting to maintain the gap on GC. Rides it to the line. Izaguirre and Bilbao on his wheel. They come out of McNulty's wheel, we guess, in the last 250 meters. The camera changed back to group 2 or 3, which was delightful from the production. And we saw a photo finish. It just come back to a photo finish between Izaguirre and Bilbao. And Izaguirre just won. Second win for Astana in a matter of 2 or 3 days. They must be very excited. Ahead of Bilbao, second. Good work from him today, and Bahrain victorious too. McNulty third, taking the 4 bonus seconds. Vingegaard fourth. Buchmann fifth. Chavez sixth on 2 seconds. And then the group behind, I think we're all credited with larger at the same time, with Knox, Valverde, Roglic, Pogacar, Carapaz, Toluk, etc. And Benji, whatever the plan was, which we're going to get to in a second, how do you explain Vingegaard not even coming top 3, taking the bonus seconds after sitting on for 20 Ks, 15 Ks?
I think it's a combination of multiple things. I think that yesterday we saw already that Roglic wasn't really aware of the last kilometer as well as Pogacar was. He even confirmed that, if I recall correctly, afterwards. And today, another Jumbo rider is in the front group. They're going to a pretty technical few corners in the last kilometer. And Vingegaard didn't anticipate those corners. He's at the back, which makes him in fifth position going into the sprint. And if you're in that position going into the last 150 meters, then it's going to be impossible to win. But also, I don't think he had it in him today. I think that he rode amazing all day, but towards the end, it probably was done for him. He can be proud of himself, though. What a ride.
Yeah, I mean, Vingegaard, he closed it down on the climb, looked really good there. McNulty, incredibly strong. And this is where we'll get into the question you asked me, Benji. McNulty now goes into the leader's jersey, 23 seconds ahead of Roglic. Vingegaard is third. Bilbao's actually fourth. Vingegaard's third on 28. Bilbao's fourth on 36. Pogacar fifth on 43 seconds. The distance between Pogacar and Roglic of 20 has not changed. All that's happened now is McNulty has leapfrogged Roglic and Vingegaard has leapfrogged Pogacar. That's pretty much the main movement of note, as well as Bilbao being in there. So I'm going to play devil's advocate and try and defend Jumbo Visma for a little bit. We got maybe a sprinty day tomorrow. Stage 6, the last stage. Paris-Nice, they had the leader's jersey, didn't work out well. Maybe they don't want the leader's jersey. They want to give it up so they can be aggressive with Jonas and Roglic on stage 6. Roglic did well on this finish in the Vuelta last year, and they didn't want to ride full at the end of this stage. They also knew that they probably weren't bringing back the Izaguirre group with McNulty, even if they did have Vingegaard pacing in the Roglic group because he was tired after the climb. That's all fine, but it makes no sense that you have Tolhoek in the group sitting up when the gap is at 52 seconds. There is no need to be giving McNulty 3 seconds. It's only when Ineos came from behind and were like, what the fuck, and started pacing with Carapaz chasing it down, that Tolhoek and Jumbo Visma eventually started to pace. And also, Roglic can pace as well. I mean, Pogacar, is he going to attack him on the flat section there? I doubt it. So that's what makes no sense. And it's a lot of the times, they'll sometimes say they have a strategy, and then you work through it, three quarters of it makes sense, and then the last quarter makes no sense. You're like, yeah, Hang on, if that's the plan, then don't you want to give McNulty 25, 30? And you still want to limit that gap. So, but yeah, do you have harsher words, Benji? Do you think I'm giving them too much credit? Or
yeah, I think you are. Yeah. I think you're giving them too much credit, because the entire situation from the point that Vingegaard was in the first group, the gap started going out, and it was Garfrey that took over in the group for Higuita, started pacing for Evadication first. If Garfrey did not take over to get there, then the gap would have been more than 52 seconds. Would have been like 130 or something. And then, what are you going to do? McNulty's in the lead with a minute then. I don't think he's going to lose a minute in the next 3 days. So I think the entire, in hindsight, thought of, oh, they did it to put Roglic not in the leader's jersey for the next couple of days, I don't believe, because, well, if that was the case, then their strategy totally laid upon every other team doing the work in the chasing. And if you have a strategy, you can't base that off what you think other teams are going to do completely, because then you're not going to get there. Especially
when Landers got Bilbao up there.
Yeah.
Astana got Izaguirre up there. Bora got Buchmann up there. It's not like you got just McNulty and the other teams are going to work with, you know, Valverde, no one worked with him. Yep. That's why he attacked trying to bridge it, and solo bridging 45, 50 seconds at the end of a stage like that, not going to do it. So my actual view is UAE absolutely played Jumbo Visma, and it's a great, great outcome for UAE. They improve McNulty. They put the onus on Roglic now to be aggressive. Let's talk about, well, first tomorrow's stage. Tomorrow's stage is one for the sprinters, theoretically. It's if you can call it that. I mean, Daryl Impey looked pretty good today. But tomorrow's stage is a little bit easier than today. Trying to rig it up, Benji. My internet's failing me here. All right, we got it up. The profile, if you can bear with me. Oh, here we go. All right. Ondarribia to Ondarroa. 158 Ks, two climbs, 2.6 Ks at 6.5% and 5 Ks at 4.7% crest, 28 Ks from the finish. So a few rollers into the finish, like 600 meters at 7%, 500 meters at 4.5%, Impy, Magnus Court type operators for tomorrow, one would think, if not a breakaway. Depends on whether ISU want to pace. They seem to have the appetite for it. But stage six is the one that everyone's been talking about, that's saying that, you know, Jumbo Visma, this is all part of some master plan to have UAE have to defend on an undefendable stage six.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Roglic is wearing the leader's jersey in Paris-Nice stage eight and going into Planche de Belfie TT. So wearing the leader's jersey and having a time advantage, it's not an advantage. Apparently, that's what people are telling me. But this 111 Ks hard stage, we've got 5 Ks at 7%, 10 Ks at 5.6% in the middle of the stage with 50 Ks to go, maybe 40, yeah, about 45 Ks to go. They've got a 5 K climb at 9.5%, short valley of about 15 Ks, then a nasty climb with some steep sections of 3.3 Ks at 7%, and then the final climb to Arrate, 4.6 Ks at 8.7%, then a little ridgeline, then the short descent into the finish. I think it's the same one that Roglic won in Vuelta Stage 1. That stage, Benji, do you even think that's hard enough to definitely put 25 seconds into McNulty if you're Roglic?
I think that there's definitely an option to do so. I don't think it's not possible. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think he's going to have to go pretty offensive, or he's going to have to depend on a sneaky move the same way that UAE did today with McNulty, but with Vingegaard for Jumbo. But obviously, UAE is going to respond to that. And like, when talking about controlling the stage, we often hear that term, controlling the stage. The leader is going to control the stage. His team is going to control the stage. But you got to keep in mind that it is not that easy to call that a strategy from far out, because when it comes to this stage, it starts off with a bit of a climb, this stage six, which means that it's likely going to be a stage where a lot of people try to go in the breakaway, because that's what those climbs at the start of the stage offer. It means that UAE will need to be at the front of the group to see, oh, who can get in the breakaway, but so will Jumbo as well, you know, because what are they going to do? Just sit up if somebody crazy goes off that is not UAE? But on paper, UAE is going to control the start of the stage, see who goes into the breakaway, check whether they need to change that at the start or not. And I think when it comes to the stage being 111 kilometers to go, it is going to offer Jumbo a bit of peace. But the problem with that is, who is it going to offer peace to on Jumbo? Hofstede is not going to get over two or three climbs here. I don't see, is it Pfingsten also in the team? I don't think he's going to get over every climb. Sam Allman hasn't been showing himself too much the last couple of days, so I don't believe that he's going to be moving the biggest of needles on this stage six. A Tolhoek, it's probably going to save him a tiny bit, but he wouldn't be doing the pacing anyway if Jumbo had to control the stage. So it's not like he would have been in a less relaxed position than he will probably be this time around. And the same goes for Vingegaard. So I think that people are putting too much on this being a strategy to have the Jumbo team pressure lessened. And I think that's not really the case here. UAE will have to control a bit more at the start of the stage, but yeah, it's not like it's going to be making too much of a difference, I think. I think that we've seen so far in this entire thing that both teams have relatively decent surroundings, but if it comes down to the end of a stage, it's always two versus two on both teams. And that is Vingegaard and Roglic versus McNulty and Pogacar. And in the end of stage six, it's likely going to be the same. And it's going to be interesting how they play it out, though, because now Vingegaard can try and do some attacks. Roglic will need to attack if he wants to make the move and do it for himself. McNulty is now ahead, so I'm guessing that Pogacar won't be doing the attacks, because otherwise he's going to put pressure on McNulty. And Pogacar will just have to sit up on Roglic's wheel, hope that Roglic doesn't gain 25 seconds. And if the gap becomes too much, like 30 seconds or something, then he's going to start attacking Roglic, I think. So it's going to be somewhat of a play like that, I think, because otherwise you're going to have a situation where Pogacar drops his own teammate if he starts playing offensively on that sixth stage. So yeah, Jumbo's move. And if Jumbo can drop McNulty, then Pogacar will have to decide when to attack at the right moment. And yeah, that's going to be a very curious thing to watch, I think.
So Jumbo drop McNulty, what are they going to do? Pace with who? For 30Ks, 40Ks? Like, it makes no sense to have given him that much time. If he was 6 seconds ahead, then you're like, oh, well, Roglic might take bonus seconds tomorrow. Roglic probably come top three tomorrow, to be honest. Like, the sprinting field is so shallow here and there's some climbs before.
Peter Schelling.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. But, like, Roglic probably be up there top three in the stage normally on stage six, but it's even 23 seconds, putting a lot more pressure on yourself than being in the leader's jersey and having to respond.
And
it
would have been much more as well if the other teams weren't there pacing in that second group. Like, EF started pacing. That changed a lot. I think that EF is going to receive a bouquet of flowers by Jumbo tonight, because otherwise the gap would have been so much more.
McCarthy eventually was like, why am I doing this? He was on the radio. Like, what am I doing?
The Gita GC, man. He's like super close now.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of funny because, like, Higuita's nowhere near in GC, so I've got no clue.
Yeah. Let us know in the comments if you're watching on YouTube, and don't say 2020 hindsight. Benji tweeted about this. I was in Discord all about this. We were like, what are they doing? And I just want to remind everybody, if Chris Froome, 2015, Chris Froome's in the leader's jersey of the Tour de France, leading by 23 seconds, or even a one-week stage race, he's got Geraint Thomas on his team, say, fifth on GC. You think he lets Thomas go into the group one and not pace through him behind in the last 15Ks and they just sit up? No. I can't imagine it. Now, if someone can show me a race where that's happened, I'll apologize to Jumbo Visma directly with a handwritten letter. But until that happens, Benji and I are a bit clueless about what happened today. Maybe they're just trying things for the tour, but I think it's better to try things that make sense than things that don't make sense, personally. Other than that, any other McNulty, Benji? I guess we've already been saying it for this week, so we don't need to say anything for too long. But as I said, 20 sub-20-minute climbs, the Wasp Aquilo and the TT performances show that he should have been doing better on these climbs, and he's showing that this week, really showing out the UAE being that second threat. And I think he's got to go to the Tour.
I believe he should as well, but looks like it's not happening. I don't think they can really... Can they change it now? Is it too close to the Giro to mix up progress? Because I would just drop Hirschi to the Vuelta.
Oh, he should be fine for the Tour as well. Hirschi was
probably
fine,
but like still, I want...
Take instead of Micah.
Yeah, certainly. And the thing is, like, not even that. We were expecting that Trentin would also be in the Tour de France team with his transfer and so forth, but he's also not looking to go to the Giro nor the Tour. He's destined for the Vuelta, apparently, which is just so... Like, UAE is in a luxury position when it comes to riders, but they're also in a position where the two transfers that they made at the end of last season might not even be that useful.
Right. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's a bit early to talk about the Tour. We'll save that for a later time. We hope you enjoyed this recap of the Basque Country Stage 4. Very exciting race. Tomorrow, not expecting any GC action. Breakaway for Schelling, like Benji said, or Honoré, or even Honoré from a sprint from a group with Magnus Cort, Roglic,
Dion
Smith, and Impey. That's all from us. We'll see you tomorrow. Ciao.